Okay, let's get down to it, boppers.
Welcome to Hard Men to Please, the only podcast where white males discuss movies both new and old. I am Major Tom, and with me is Heath the Mastiff Mastin.
Hello.
Today we're doing reviews of two films currently in theaters, the western Hell or High Water and the thriller Don't Breathe. Then we take a look back at classic cult film The Warriors.
We dig TV, we dig remote control, we dig the Furry Freak Brothers and the Twilight Zone, we dig Marvel and DC, we dig Run DMC, we dig Renegade, Soundwave and AC/DC.
So, Mastiff, you saw yes. Hell or High Water, Hell or Bong Water.
Yeah.
How was that film?
Hello or High Water is what I saw. Okay. Did you ask me how it was?
No, I didn't give a shit. That's not what we do on this podcast. We're going to talk about how good movies are.
It was good. It was very good.
Yeah, so who's in it? I heard there was a real power trio in there.
Yeah, there's at least one third of a power trio.
Jeff Bridges.
Bridge over Troubled Water.
Yeah, in this film. Okay, so you saw Hell or High Water.
Yes.
Which would be, you know what? Darren Aronofsky should have used that title for his Noah movie.
What did he use instead?
I think he used Noah.
Real creative, Darren.
You know, way to push the limits, Darren. You know, it would have been a more fun movie if they didn't make it explicit that it was Noah. I mean, they could have named the guy Noah. But I guess that would have given it away. So
some other movie about a guy who builds an ark.
Yeah, I love those movies where you kind of watch the whole thing and you're like, oh, wait, that was just whatever.
Yeah, just some guy building an ark, putting two of every animal.
Well, my wife had a book of vampire erotica, and the only story in it that I read, it turned out later, it was like, oh, shit, that was Snow White.
The only one you read? Really?
The only one I read all the way through.
How was it, Snow White? Should I ask that? Do I dare ask?
Well, you know, just because, like, vampires are kind of like dead people, and that's what Snow White was at the end, and then you kiss her and she wakes up, except it was like a necrophiliac prince fucked her, and then she woke up.
Mm.
It was a little tawdry, a little lacking in class.
A little gauche.
A little gauche.
You know what else is tawdry and gauche? Chris Pine.
Good old Chris Poon. How was he doing in this one?
Chris Pine in Hell or High Water is...
He was number two of the power trio, definitely the weak link.
Yeah, no, definitely number three.
Okay, well...
Of my
name recognition-wise, I think he's more well-known because of Star Trek.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But that doesn't mean a lick.
Not to this fucking Hepcat.
Not to this Mastiff.
Ben Foster, the other major link in that.
Yeah, the main player is Jeff Bridges, Ben Foster, Chris Pine.
What's the movie about?
Basically, Chris Pine and
fucking lawmen, I hope, because why would you make a Western not about lawmen?
Yeah, there's definitely lawmen in it. The lawman is Jeff Bridges.
And is it a true Western in terms of like the 1860s?
No, it's funny because I really didn't know anything about this movie other than that it was a Western coming into it. And so I'm like,
all I know about it, I'm checking my data banks, you know, in my brain of the poster, and Jeff Bridges wears sunglasses in it, doesn't he?
I don't know. I didn't see the poster, but sure.
Okay. So not any point in the movie does he wear sunglasses. Big disappointment, friends. Don't see the movie.
Plot hole. No, but yeah, I thought it was a Western, like a horse, you know, riding horses Western. And then the first scene is like a blue Chevy Camaro driving by. And I'm like, oh, I guess
nice.
That's a... Modern
it's like
time.
Blazing Saddles.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a modern Western. That's kind of cool, though.
Modern Western.
So which one wins out in the end? The Hell or the High Water? Do you mind spoiling it?
No, I won't spoil it.
Okay.
Sorry.
We'll leave that a mystery.
Yeah, I refuse to answer that question. It's the Chris Pine and Ben Foster are brothers who are going around robbing some banks.
No good Nicks.
No good Nicks. Their names aren't Nick, but that's okay.
That'd be confusing. They were both named Nick.
Yeah. This is a good idea for a movie, though. No Good Nicks, just... sorry, Nick Cage and Nick Swardson?
Wow. That's quite a cast.
Who's the second best Nick?
Nick...
Is there a Baldwin? Nicks in... Nicholas Nick Baldwin?
There's a Nick Baldwin. Is there a Nick... I don't know. I don't know any other Nicks.
Yeah, sorry to...
Nick Penn, maybe?
Nick Penn?
Oh. There's got to be another Nick.
Yeah.
There are a lot of Nicholas directors. Nicholas Winding Refn, Nicholas Roeg.
Yeah. Nick Palazzo? Palazzato? Isn't that the True Detective guy?
I don't know.
Maybe not. Sorry.
So we've gotten about two words into the plot. There were two Nicks. Right.
We're shut up for a second. So it's about Ben Foster and Chris Pine are brothers. They're robbing banks, trying to make money to pay off the mortgage on their dead mother's farm. And so they're going around just robbing like small banks, kind of keeping it low key. And Jeff Bridges is the local lawman on the case, trying to track him down while he spouts a lot of racist jokes about Indians and Mexicans.
Yikes. Because... So we're in Gran Torino territory, huh?
Yeah, basically. His partner is half Mexican, half Indian.
So that makes it even more inappropriate.
Yeah.
Bad taste.
Yeah, a lot of, cringy moments. But, you know, Jeff Bridges, he just charms it up.
Well, it's a lot of gray area. It sounds like a racist cop, and you've got two guys who are stealing, but for a good reason.
Yeah, for a good reason. And they're trying to...
A couple of Aladdins in this movie.
Yeah, everyone's basically Aladdin. They're trying to keep it, like, without murders, trying to keep it clean. Just quick, get some money, not too much, and just taking it from the bank, not like any of the people's money or anything. So that's kind of the basic premise. I don't want to spoil anything from there, but, you know, it has a lot of great themes to it. And you know what? I've been reading about the movie. There aren't too many reviews out there, but everything I've read is not positive.
Really?
I'm surprised.
So did you like it?
Yeah, I loved it. It was great.
Is it a good romp? It clips along, keeps you in the seat?
Yeah, it clipped along. Yeah, maybe a couple parts in the beginning.
What'd you hear that was bad about it? That you would you refute?
I'll refute it.
Yeah, refute that shit.
I was reading something on Roger Ebert's website written by
fucking name names.
Fuck, what was the guy's name?
It's fucking Roger Ebert, son of a bitch.
Yeah. Roger Ebert himself. He's called a derivative, this guy. I think his name was Paul.
Derivative. Oh, well, see, that's the problem is film critics see every movie.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of times where I'm like, man, that's kind of a neat idea. And so I was like, oh, that's just lifting the plot of this 1960s film that
no one has
seen.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. I mean, I think that like...
Because no one was alive in the 60s, really. That matters.
Yeah, no one today.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I get that. But I really think this movie, like, whatever it derived from or ever ripped off, I think it put its own spin on it enough. It's really just a movie about like the history of Texas and the future of Texas and just kind of the bridging of the generations. It does a lot of, most of it's very like subtle nods throughout of kind of the old hat giving way to kind of the new generation of Texans who aren't cowboys anymore necessarily. There's, you know, some guy in a diner at one point. Jeff Bridges is questioning him about a robbery because it happened across the street, and the guy's just like, "Who robs banks anymore? That seems so whatever the fuck Western."
Yeah,
like, that's the point.
Well, you know, I just heard maybe a month ago that a woman robbed a bank and then just sat outside because she wanted to go to jail because she was homeless and was sick of getting like, you know, being unsafe living in the park.
Jesus.
And I was like, man, how long could you wait there before you're like, shit, I could have gotten away with this.
Could have just bought my own house. Yeah. Just the movie is, like I said, about the history of Texas. So the Jeff Bridges sidekick, South Indian. So it's kind of the idea of the new generations coming in and wiping out the old generations and kind of replacing them, and how each
generation... Is that what's happening? The Native Americans are wiping out whites in Texas?
No.
Wow, how about that?
Yeah, he represents...
Making a comeback, baby. Don't call it a comeback.
So yeah, that guy obviously represents the oldest, you know, living people there, the Indians, and then we also have Mexicans, so it's talking about how they take over. Jeff Bridges is kind of an old school Texan guy.
This all sounds extremely derivative of No Country for Old Men. You know what's funny though? I was thinking of I watched No Country for Old Men because I got a new TV and I wanted to see if it did that soap opera effect on it, you know, where everything's too smooth and it ends up looking so good that it looks shitty.
Right.
And like ruins the movie. So I just turned on No Country for Old Men and I just kind of couldn't stop watching it. And I was thinking in terms of that and the movie that I saw, and it's kind of funny that there's a lot more crossover. See, I felt bad. I thought we weren't theming this very well because we were going to do a very themed episode. And instead, we ended up doing a lot of different movies, but they actually have a lot of crossover.
Okay. Well, yeah. Do you want to talk about the movie you saw? Don't Speak.
Are you done? Do you have anything else to see? Yeah, the Gwen Stefani biopic, Don't Speak.
No, that's really about it. It's a good movie. Go see it. If you live in Texas, it maybe holds a little bit extra special weight. Because they drink a lot of Lone Star.
Drinking a lot of Lone Star. They're eating a lot of tacos. They're singing "The Stars at Night Are Big and Bright."
Deep in the heart of Texas.
Yeah, solid.
Yeah, so, you know, there's a lot to it. I may try to unpack it more in a written piece.
Okay, so we could look for that on superrapattack@wordpress.com.
Do it.
Right now. By the time this publishes, that'll be up there.
Oh, 100%.
Dear listener. Yeah.
So you saw a movie also.
Yes.
What a coincidence.
Don't Breathe. Not only fantastic advice, but also a film that answers the question, what if the climax to Silence of the Lambs was an entire film?
Yeah.
You've seen Silence of the Lambs?
I have.
Okay,
so
well,
I get that reference.
That for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Also, what if Bilbo burglaring a dragon den was reset in modern-day Detroit?
Ooh.
Both of those things in one film.
The second film sounds better.
They're the same film.
Wow.
And it's called Don't Breathe, which is confusing because it's... I'll get to why. So
because all the characters breathe throughout the movie?
Yeah, for one thing, there's a lot of breathing. Everyone breathes. It's a major plot hole. So what it's about is teens in Detroit rob homes with the keys that they have because one of them, teen's father works for a security firm, which I guess means that he has all the keys to every house and like the pin for the security code.
Don't think that's
any,
what that
and
means.
He does. Yeah, I don't think so either. But anyway, so they do that. And, this operation that they have is seems like it's humming along because they hold fast to a few rules.
Mm-hmm.
They don't steal cash.
Nice.
They never steal more than $10,000, which I guess is the point where it's grand theft. So they kind of keep the, you know, mafia law, keep the fuzz quiet, right? So basically they, you know, it opens up, they're stealing all this stuff from a home.
Why don't they steal cash?
I don't know that.
That's the easiest thing
I don't know that.
Steal and replace.
Well, yes, and it's also a plot point is that basically how it goes is the first job, they do well, whatever. They go to sell what they got, and they don't make a lot of money. There's a lot of overhead that's lost because they're selling it to someone who's going to resell it on the street and whatever. And so for some reason, them not stealing cash means that they aren't just coming out of this like $10,000 richer every time. So they follow a tip from this guy who's their go-between to go for the ultimate score, which I would call Operation Stolen Valor, because the idea is that they're going to rob the home of a disabled veteran of his bereavement money from when his daughter was killed and he was paid off in a settlement.
Jesus.
So right off the bat, you've got a bit of a sympathy gulch, a bit of a gap.
Oh, you're supposed to be sympathetic for these robbing assholes?
Yeah, I mean, they do. There's very little. So there's three of them, right? There's a boy who's kind of, he's the one who's careful, and his father's the security guy, and there's no real reason given why he's doing this. There's another boy who's a real dickhead, and you know that because he wears his hair in cornrows, and he jacks off in the house, which leaves a lot of DNA.
Whoa. Talk about the wet bandit.
Yeah, oddly enough, not the only time that jism features heavily in the movie. Mm. I'll leave that a mystery, though. But and then there's the girl who's the most sympathetic because she lives in a trailer. She's got a little sister. Her mom's a shithead who used to lock her in a trunk of a car when she would cry as a child when because her father left. So this film actually doubles as a travel guide to Detroit. go visit Detroit, guys.
If your kid cries, throw him in the trunk.
Yeah. So yeah, they go in. They decide to rob this guy's place. Now, the whole plot point where they're using this kid's security money, it's not a huge deal, but by the time they get to the guy's house, the key doesn't work. Mm. So it
Which guy's house?
Why even... they're going to this blind veteran. They're going to steal. This is going to be the ultimate score. So for whatever reason, they think he's got about six figures in there because of the settlement. So obviously, you know, the straight-laced guy with the rules is like, no, we're not doing this job. This is too hot. And then the other guy's like, don't be a pussy. And the girl's like, I need the money. Okay, so she needs the money because she wants to abscond with her little sister to California. Why California? I don't know. I think there's some built-in sympathy for them being in Detroit. I think you have to give them some millennial solidarity and say, yeah, getting a job in Detroit's probably hard. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and rob. But you don't, I mean, you don't need like $300,000 to move to California. I moved to California and I had belongings to move and a family and it cost me like $5,000. I mean, you'd really just need first and last month's rent. You get a job and you go. So you need like $3,000.
Yeah.
So unlike in Hell or High Water, there's not a great reason to sympathize with their theft in the first place, right? It's not like they're paying off the mortgage. It's not like, you know, a Breaking Bad situation where you've got cancer payments, which is going to be hugely. You don't want someone to foreclose and take your cancer back. You have to pay, make the payments.
Yeah, keep that cancer.
Yeah.
Pass it down to your kids.
They get in the home. The blind guy obviously wakes up or whatever. They try to knock him out, but they can't. He wakes up and they have a bit of a rough spot. You know, I feel like an idiot. I didn't get a clip together this week. It would probably be bad, though, because there's not a lot of dialogue in the film. It's a lot of quiet action because the whole idea is if you're quiet, the guy can't hear you. So it's kind of like that, you know, that bit in Resident Evil 4 when you have those big Wolverine guys with the eyes sewn shut.
Yeah.
It's kind of tense because you don't want to make noise. And
super tense.
Yeah, so that's kind of then the gimmick of the movie is that they're basically stuck in this house. The guy, you know, the guy goes through this process of learning how many people are in his home. He like barricades up, you know, the doors so they're all locked in. At one point in the trailer shows this, they're, you know, in the basement, which is just a massive sprawling basement. I mean, he could grow enough weed in there to keep Detroit happy.
To fix his glaucoma.
Yeah. And he turns off the lights, so they're completely blind. Ooh. And he, being blind, already has the up on them. So it's, you know, kind of, again, like a Buffalo Bill, Clarice Starling thing, except extended throughout the whole thing.
Does he have, like, heightened hearing and stuff, a la Daredevil?
He kind of does, which annoyed me. So basically, if something loud happens, it's not enough that he just can't get a fix on people. It's that he's actually like, blah! Like, goes into, like, T-1000, you know, in the lava mode, where he's like, blah! Yeah. But overall, he just knows the house better. You can see him, you know, he walks by and he touches the beams to count his way, and he kind of has a better idea of what's going on. It's a good gimmick, because you do have those moments where he's learning how many people are his home. They can basically hide in plain sight. And you get those neat moments of, you know, when are they up? When is he up? And it all works out. The opening shot when they're in the house, they're looking for the money, is like one kind of, I don't know if it's a fully extended, but it's one kind of long extended take through the house. And it kind of sets it up like a Rube Goldberg machine. There's like really obvious like Chekhov's gun planning. Like at one point, the camera just kind of like dollies all the way into the laundry room, which is also like his work bench room, and there's like a hammer on the wall, and it walks up to the hammer, looks at it for 3 seconds, and then moves away. Nobody's interacting with the hammer at this point. You know, it sweeps under the guy's bed to see he's got a revolver on tied to a belt under his bedpost. And it's like, you know, if he went to walk to the bed later in the movie and grabbed the gun, it wouldn't be like, where'd that gun come from? So I think it was kind of a waste.
Right.
But it does kind of flow well. It does have a Rube Goldberg kind of quality of reaction and counter-reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Or action and reaction, or, you know, cause and effect. And it does have this kind of back and forth constantly where you think they're going to get out and then they can't and then they can. And then, you know, the blind guy knows where they are and then he doesn't and all this stuff. And so it does keep it kind of going. It takes a while to get set up because you are just kind of waiting for something to happen, even though like 10 minutes into the movie, they're in the house. So there isn't this like long setup of getting to know the characters, which is... To me, that's the main problem with it, is I just didn't give a shit about any of them. They were very flat, and again... Now, this guy's no angel. They find out throughout, as they're in there, that he's not so innocent himself, and he's maybe has a poor grieving techniques.
Ooh, what does that mean? So, is that where the jisms come back to play?
Well, his daughter died, and so he's got all this money, and he's a veteran, so maybe he's a little shell-shocked. But basically, they discover things about him that then put them in even more danger than they were in the first place. So it's not simply a case of people breaking into a guy's house and he's, you know, invoking castle law to kill them. It's mm-hmm. that, you know, the stakes keep getting raised. But it takes a while for it to get raised enough that you care, because the characters are so... It kind of has to reach a point where you're just at survival mode. Like, I don't want to see someone get cut up, so let's go. You know, even though I don't care about this character... I just don't want to see anything this bad happen. So that's what it requires for it to really get going.
It's weird because, yeah, the way you're describing it in my brain, I feel like I want the blind guy to win. It sounds like basically what you're saying that I agree with is you're able to sympathize with characters that are humanized. You know, when someone's not humanized and they come off as just like a flat character, that's when it's difficult to sympathize with them, no matter what they're going through in the film, no matter what you're supposed to empathize with them or not.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, if you're going to try to play the, oh, I'm innocent because I have to rob, you really have to nail that. And so, I mean, because otherwise it just sounds hypocritical. It sounds like, some blowing smoke up my ass, you have to rob. I mean, unless that's an airtight case, where it's like, yeah, you really got to rob, that's true. Then, you know, I don't give a shit.
You know, in Hell or High Water, they don't actually reveal the purpose of them robbing until somewhat, maybe not halfway, but like maybe a quarter through the film, after mm-hmm. they've already gone through a couple of robberies on film.
Okay, so like the dirty work principle. Oh, no, that one reveals it right away.
Dirty work?
Yeah.
they definitely reveal that first. But, I mean, they show them doing the robberies and they're not, or at least Chris Pine's kind of the sympathetic one, and Ben Foster's kind of the wild card.
But wild card.
Yeah. I mean, you can see that they're not trying to like cause a ruckus or like just do it to be assholes. I don't know. Maybe I didn't quite pick up on it as well as you did, but
I didn't watch that movie.
Well, I mean, pick up on that aspect of the movies, that now that we're making connections between the two of them.
Oh yeah,
about painting sympathetic characters versus ones you're supposed to be sympathetic for.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. Like, if you feel like you're getting strong armed into it, you kind of resist more. You know, so it's like, all right, just come right out with it. Yeah, we're thieves. I mean, you're in Detroit. You already got some. It's like, yeah, I'm not gonna. I understand life is rough.
Yeah, and I mean, I kind of just sympathize with the coolest characters anyway. no matter what they're doing.
As far as cool characters go, that's the Warriors all over.
Most of them are cool, yeah. Some of the gangs we'll get to, maybe not as cool.
Well, but, let's get to it. The Warriors. You know, you know when you put on a movie and you're like, all right, I'm going to give it 10 minutes or whatever. This movie needs literally like 30 seconds because you have the opening, which is that, you know, this cool soundtrack going. And these guys are just like basically on the train to meet up with other gangs. And you just get this weird like 1960s Batman cavalcade of rogues gallery.
Of, yeah. So,
you know, at first you have the warriors who are already like kind of camp because they're all wearing like no shirt and these leather vests, and mm-hmm. then you cut to another gang which has dazzling purple vests and matching pimp hats, and then another gang that's all mime,
the boppers, the hi-hats.
Yeah, and it's just like I'm completely sold on this movie. It's bananas immediately.
Yeah, it's funny, before we even talking about this movie on the podcast, I recently went back and watched just the first 10 minutes of this movie because it's so great.
Oh, yeah.
Up to the gang like coalition coming together. That's just so much fun to watch.
The big meeting. This is a cult movie. You've seen this before. I just watched this for the first time.
Yeah. I've seen it a few years ago. And then recently, like I said, the first 10 minutes a couple weeks ago. It's good. It's definitely a fun movie to watch. It plays out so much like a video game. I think that's what really appeals to me.
Well, they made a video game out of it.
Yeah, because it's
it was just like itself.
Exactly. Yeah, the framework was all there.
It reminds me also of like 300, where it's basically you're watching these guys, and it's basically just going to be wave after wave of enemies until the movie's over.
Yeah, I mean the goal is clear. You know what they have to get to, and it's like an obvious goal. They have to get home, or 300. They have to get through this little whatever the
yeah
fuck.
Now this was actually based on like a Greek story of like soldiers caught behind enemy lines and having to get home. So
yeah, Xenophon's Anabasis is what
yeah
it was.
Some xenophobe.
It was based on a novel that was based on whatever the fuck Greek bullshit.
Yeah. So it's quite well distilled.
Yeah, and apparently they wanted to play that a little bit heavier handed with like, I think they wanted some like narration throughout talking about the Greek themes or whatever, but thankfully the whoever
is that in the director's cut? That sounds awful.
I don't think that is. Director's cut has a different intro that I watched that's awful, and the transitions between the scenes I think is like very stylized like a comic, which also sounds kind of awful.
Yeah.
So
but I love the transition of the DJ. I mean, that was awesome. That was just like perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. Super.
And actually, especially those keep cutting back to the head of the riffs, who is like just like a video game stock. You know what he looks like? He looks like the opening to Bad Dudes, where it's just that dude with the sunglasses looking slightly off camera.
Yeah. Yeah. Just his head sitting there.
Yeah. And he's just getting update after update about, oh, sorry, the Warriors cut through our men like rat through a dick.
Yeah, exactly. Just like a video game. They do the cutscenes, like, here's this bad guy, you beat him, and then here's the ultimate bad guy getting the news that you beat him. And
yeah.
He's like, okay, well, I'm going to send this other baddie.
Yeah, another film that they get off to a start right away. It's a super lean script, and it's completely focused on the characters. So it's kind of one of those, it's going to live or die based on whether you want to see these guys get their ass kicked or whether you want to see them get home.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, going back to the beginning, I think we got to talk how cool Cyrus is. I took a note here. Just Cyrus is fucking cool.
Yeah, he's in charge. Can you dig it?
That's why I watched it recently. I just love that speech he gives.
Yeah. Well,
like,
it's funny because
I
yeah, if you can count, then you know why we're here. And I was like, okay. Yeah. Right on. And the Warriors, the only guys without the class to get on board. And then fucking Spicoli shoots the shit out of him for no reason. I thought that guy was Sean Penn's brother. We were looking at the cast list. Speaking of, the only notes I took were Ajax, the tough warrior, is Dexter's dad in Dexter.
Oh, did not know that.
Which I was like, who's that guy? I can imagine him kind of old. And then two, is that girl Ralph Macchio's sister or Ralph Macchio in drag?
Both are very possible. I don't know.
Yeah, I was looking at, well, she, Mercy, she gets on screen and she's, you know, she's got a lot of spunk. She's kind of dishing it to the guys.
Yeah, she does.
In front of a fucking lazy eye Ray Romano, a leader of the orphans. And I'm like, ah, she's, you know, she's kind of cute. I kind of like, again, characterization. I immediately kind of want them to like warm up to her and kind of like bring her in the gang. So I was glad that they did. But then like they did a close up. I'm like, holy shit. She looks a hell of a lot like Ralph Macchio. And actually her acting is really similar to Ralph Macchio too. Like not quite good. And also just that style, you know?
Yeah. That kind of like, hey, I'm a tough guy.
Yeah, I grew up in Indiana, but I'm actually from the Bronx over here.
Yeah. I wonder.
So that, I couldn't get over that for the rest of the movie.
That's No, I did not put that together. I don't know. The thing I also like about this movie is just, I mean, I didn't know that guy was Dexter's dad, but none of these actors I'd ever seen before or after, which I always appreciate from like a cult movie.
Oh, yeah, you like it when they're, you want them to, because, I mean, it lets them be themselves. It's kind of nice when it's a young actor who became someone, because you can kind of be like, oh, awesome, they were really cool when they were young. Oh, well, the other notes I had were, everyone looks like they took ballet. Like the way they're jumping over turnstiles and just generally running. It was like, it's kind of Swan Lake-esque, like they're kind of prancing.
Yeah, definitely, it's pretty much a ballet. There's, one part when the guys in the bus, the turnbill ACs are running around, and he sends the one guy as a lookout. He definitely does like a pirouette.
Yeah, something like that. Or like he's on point or whatever.
Fancy leap.
Yeah.
He's like, that's the other thing I liked about it.
There are no kids around here to call him Mary.
But part of me kind of liked the idea that the movie was just a bunch of theater kids come together to do a gang movie.
It comes across like a West Side Story Butch version.
Yeah, I could see that.
And actually, what I read is that it was the book was written as kind of a response to West Side Story, like glamorizing gangs. And it was like, no, gangs actually beat the fuck out of each other and are animals.
Mm. Yeah, no fancy pants over here.
Yeah. The other thing in terms of on the topic of them being fancy pants is it sounded like it was everybody's first day swearing. There were a lot of lines that were really like ring the cursor, like, oh, it's a goddamn shame, or et cetera. We're up Schitt's Creek.
There's pausing a lot so that they could like very easily cut it out.
Yeah, I guess
for the PG version.
Like, watch out, boys, we gotta cut this one down.
Yeah, give a second pause before and after. I mean, yeah, the dialogue, the acting, it's, you know, a little stilted, but I guess that's part of the charm.
Yeah, and it's weird to think of a movie that, like, you know, there is all that kind of silliness going on, yet at the time it was like one of those, like, do we need to pull this from theaters kind of films?
Yeah, there was, like, a couple of reports of, like, people getting killed at screenings.
Just the idea that they censored, I guess, the trailer or whatever said, you know, there's 10,000 of them and 20,000 cops and they outnumber them, they could rule the city, and it's like, shit, man, don't tell them that, don't let them know you could do this in real life, kids.
60,000 members, you can't do the arithmetic, sucker.
Yeah.
And I guess apparently they censored it down to sometimes it would just have the title and the day it was coming out, so it's like, what the hell is this movie?
Yeah, what is the Warriors about? I've been calling it the Warriors to annoy my wife, and at one point I told her that the character of Wario was based on this movie. And she did like a reflexive, really? And I was like, ah, no, moron.
From any specific gang member or just...
No, just I don't know, in general. Just because I kept saying Wario's. But again, you know, you're reflexively just like, oh, really? That's interesting. Before you have time to think of how stupid that sounds. Now, you did a ranking of the gangs in this film, right?
Yeah, I did that. I figured it might do better in a written form.
So you're not gonna maybe be looking. Are we gonna tease it? Can we get a tease?
No, shut up. I'll do a tease. But yeah, I was focusing on the other gangs, not the main ones.
So not the Warriors.
Not the Warriors. Who cares about them? Or the Gramercy Riffs? They're obviously cool.
Yeah.
Let's talk more about the Baseball Furies of the movie.
Well, it's funny because we were going to again in terms of the setup for this podcast and how fucking shitty it went. I was going to see Suicide Squad. I was going to take one of my many children to see it because she wanted to see it, and then the day
so
of,
many kids,
yeah, lots of them, college age to preschool age, all over the place. But anyway, a day of, she decided she wanted to see Don't Breathe, which was my own fault because I at one point sent her the trailer because she likes thrillers and horror movies, and I thought that she'd like that. And unbeknownst to me, if we had done Suicide Squad, we thought it would be a good, just because it's kind of a squad of gang members, kind of.
Yeah.
But you would have had also the crossover of a baseball wielding street tough in full clown makeup. So the Warriors invented Juggalos.
Oh, 100%. Invented Juggalos, and I'm sure Jared Leto watched it a lot.
The Baseball Furies were hard to beat. Now, were they also mute? I don't think they said anything, did they?
They didn't say anything. They may all just be a bunch of mute guys that came together.
Just by spontaneously, that wasn't part of their code.
I did appreciate them because they're the only ones that had any kind of mask on. So I was like, well, that's a pretty good idea. If I was in that gang, you could be in the gang and no one would know it was you. And you
can
take off your makeup, take off your baseball outfit and go back to living your life.
Go back to the firm. Go back to Wall Street. Well, that's true. Yeah. Well, because that one guy, Ajax, has that awesome line where he says he's going to take that baseball bat and shove it up your ass and make you into a popsicle.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh, this guy's tough. And
he's got some good lines.
There was no response. It's like there's like a serious lack of smack talk in this film for rival gangs. Even Ray Romano, like, what's her name? Ralph Macchio lady version, the Jack and Jill Ralph Macchio, like, castigates him, and he acts like, hey, we're going to take your colors off, or you can't pass, and they're like, fuck off, and they just walk away, and he's just like, okay.
Yeah, yeah, no, they get played pretty bad. I do appreciate all the gangs. None of them want to take off their colors, and even how ridiculous their outfits are, they all really, like, stand behind it.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
no one breaks ever.
No, the fucking like, overalls cool. Gang with the jag-off on roller skates.
Yeah.
Getting into a fight in a bathroom on roller skates.
Those guys are the worst.
Yeah, they were do you have them with the lowest tier?
Well, no, the orphans are obviously the worst because they're biggest bag of pussies in the world.
And they have the low rent, like they printed their own t-shirts. Yeah, on the back.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fucking green shirts. The weakest sauce name for any of the gangs.
Yeah, it's like they're literally all actually orphans.
Yeah.
We're the street boys.
Even the Lizzies, the lady gang, come probably the closest to killing some warriors.
Yeah, the old honeypot. That was good.
Yeah, the honeypot.
I totally forgot that scene. I was trying to remember.
That scene is great because it was foiled because Rembrandt, the gang member, was so obviously gay and just couldn't wait to get out of there.
Yeah, most of the characters are very obviously gay in real life.
Yeah, well, I mean, even I'm like, is this character explicitly gay? Because they're like, hey, we're all going to get laid. And he's like, come on, guys, we got to go. This is stupid.
It's getting late.
Yeah, guys, we really got to get to where we're going. Like, we're all getting our dick sucked for free.
That the guy Rembrandt and the other guy Fox, who gets hit by the train. Spoiler.
Yeah.
apparently, that guy Fox was supposed to be the one that gets with Mercy, But
yeah, because they were paired early on.
Yeah. Yeah, they were paired, and that character is supposed to be the one that gets with her, but apparently the actors just had, like, zero chemistry.
I heard that, I read that Fox was just a general dick, so they fired him.
Yeah, he threw a big stink over that they changed it up, so Swan was the guy who got the sexy time.
So they're like, well, guess what, fucko? You got a really easy-to-spot afro, so we're just going to outfit a stunt double and toss you in front of a train. What I love about that is that later on, when everyone's wondering, where did Swan go? Where did Ajax go? No one asks where Fox went. And it goes uncommented upon for the rest of the movie.
That's right. And he's the only one that die, or does the guy in the beginning die? I wasn't quite sure about that.
Yeah, I think he gets killed too. Yeah, he kind of gets like elbowed to death. Like no one wants to like hurt their fists, so they all just keep dropping bows on him.
Yeah, his big weakness is slow moving elbows.
Which was a shame because he fucking slugged the first guy who came at him. He like did a perfect kung fu move, and I was excited for more. And then he just got kind of overwhelmed.
Yeah, he was in the middle of the riffs. Can't handle the riffs. Yeah.
So how did the Riffs even find out the truth? Did they have like a fucking sonic hearing device where they heard Spicoli admit that he killed Cyrus?
No, he must have been hitting the bong. There's a scene where the guy walks in and he's like, this guy knows who killed Cyrus.
Oh, okay. So he was loose lips, sank that ship.
Yeah, I can't remember. I don't know what... He wasn't a character that was introduced before. I don't know what gang he was supposed to be with.
But, okay, so they just kind of like off camera, like we're like, yeah, by the way, these guys figured it out.
Yeah, he walks in and this guy's like, who's this sucker? And he's like, he knows who shot Cyrus.
Oh, okay. So he was the only guy paying attention at that fucking 10,000 group meetup.
Yeah, you think all the Riffs who are lined around the stage looking out into the crowd, one of them would see the very obvious gunfire.
They're fucking drawn like moths to a flame of that fucking charismatic ass Cyrus.
Damn you, Cypher.
Cyrus the virus.
Yeah, so I guess that was about it.
Yeah, it was a little dicey at times, because Swan threatens to run a train on Mercy at one point, and I couldn't figure out what happened to Ajax. I was like, it looks like he was getting some kind of decent for 1970s New York consent from that lady. She said something like, "Hey, slow down, you're gonna get it." I'm like, okay. I guess that counts, but he definitely was advocating rape.
he was, I like it rough.
Not just that, but he's like,
color.
I got a bad vibe when he's like, doesn't she know it's not safe to wait around, fellas? And like, nah, dude.
Yeah, look at that. They all walk by her, and then Ajax is like, hey, wait a second, guys. I could definitely, what are you doing here?
it took him a while to get a chub. and everyone else is just like, Ajax, there's not time for us to rape her. Let's go.
Yeah, on any other night, we'd be right behind you, buddy.
Yeah, it was a little odd. So that was no good. And then obviously Swan, it's a little too rough, I think. He was not a nice fella to Mercy. I think she deserved better. Because they kind of transferred, Fox called her a whore early on, and then just like suddenly Swan also is disapproving of whores.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny.
It's like, you guys are really fucking moralistic for gang members.
Yeah, you think they would deal with whores on a daily basis.
Yeah, you think it'd be like, oh, whores, fucking great, because obviously I don't have a steady job, so I'm going to be dealing with, you know, ladies that aren't used to high society.
But yeah, the interesting thing was, they're macking hardcore in the whatever empty train tunnel.
Yeah, in the tunnel.
And then
in the tunnel.
And then he stops short of getting in her tunnel. Yeah. And then she's the one that's like, hey, no, come on, let's do it. Like she was pushing for it, and then he just is like, no,
you know
got soft.
Yeah, he came in his pants. And he was like, no, this is wrong. We shouldn't do this. Did you just
had a moral awakening?
No, it's no, it's just we shouldn't do this. It's too fast.
Yeah, way too fast. You were moving too fast. That's what happened.
Yeah. But a fucking fantastic movie. I'd like to see it again.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that you can pop in, watch, like I said, the first 10 minutes is great up until Cyrus, spoiler, gets shot. just to hear his awesome speech. And to watch, yeah, the intro of all the gangs being introduced and walking around.
I mean, just the gangs themselves, just seeing them. I mean, there was one that looked like a bunch of, like, Chinese railway workers or, like, peasants. Like, they had, like, Chinese peasant hats on.
Yeah, yeah. What are those guys' names? It's not very clear. The Savage Huns.
The Savage Huns?
Hun, H-U-N.
Oh, okay. The Savage Huns. That's not bad, though. I mean, that's a pretty good gang name, I gotta say. I'd be part of that gang if they allowed me in.
Yeah, except for the uniforms are kind of weak.
Yeah, lacking.
Nothing compared to the electric eliminators. Those dope ass jackets.
Wait, they were electric eliminators? I thought they were the electric illuminators.
No, it's the electric illuminators.
The dazzlers.
Yeah.
Who else made your list? Anyone else that was pretty fucking cool?
Well, I think the Moon Runners are underrated gang.
The Moon Runners? Who were they?
Just some badass dudes wearing purple tank tops over red t-shirts.
Wow.
And just that name, Moon Runners.
Yeah.
Solid name.
Anyone else good?
They were rivals to the Van Cortlandt Rangers.
I love the Kim Van Cortlandt Rangers. The Van Buren pretty... boys.
That's exactly what I thought about. The Van Cortlandt Rangers.
They got a call out in the speech too.
Yeah, they were right next to the Moon Runners. That's what Cyrus was saying. Like, you know, this is great. We're all coming together. These bitter rivals can make peace.
That's weird that they didn't get them all super baked first. They just assumed that they'd all be cool hanging out together.
The best gang, though, I'll say, the gladiators is the guys in the black t-shirts who are kind enough to pay fare for each member getting onto the subway.
I saw that.
That's the best. And then you mentioned those pimp-ass dudes in the beginning, the boppers, the purple vests. And, the mimes with the hi-hats. So there's been... The hi-hats, yeah. There's been for the past 10 years or so, talks about making a remake. The only beef I had, though, is in every discussion of doing a remake, they explicitly mentioned that there would be no Baseball Furies or hi-hats or the mimes.
Why do they say that?
Because they want to do, like, a realistic take on this absurd-ass movie. And I think the talks about the remake, at least one thing I read, was to place it in Los Angeles.
They definitely, I would approve of them making a remake as long as they did it with a bandana. If they did it with bandanas, they can do it. I'm happy.
Yeah, I mean, I go back and forth on that. It's definitely a movie you can remake.
You can remake this like 18 times.
Yeah, totally. Just, you can even do it in like different cities.
Yeah.
Like do the same movie, but just different settings.
Yeah, you could pull you could pull the Jackie Chan, where you've got the one in the Western, you've got the one in modern day LA, you've got, you know, you just do it over. I mean, it comes from a Greek story. It's a band of brothers stuck behind enemy lines has to get back. Okay,
Band of Brothers, and that's a movie you should watch, or a miniseries.
Yeah, I think that's the second time we brought that up.
So yeah, I would say watch it, remake it, whatever. It's not going to ruin the cult classic that is the 1979 version.
Yeah, you're never going to beat that. Well, maybe you will. Probably not, though.
Probably not.
Well, I'd say that'll do us for today. Stick a fork in this shit. It's done.
Yeah, went a little bit over it. Did we hit everything?
It was pretty loose. We went hard and tight last time. We're going soft and loose this time.
Yeah.
So let's wrap this up.
Let's wrap it up.
Hey, dear precious listener, make sure to subscribe to Hard Man to Please on SoundCloud because we don't pay for the unlimited content. So we're, yeah, with the, exactly. You subscribe, become a blood rider.
Blood rider. So when I said blood runner.
Yeah, definitely run some blood around for doctors. We're not paying for SoundCloud, so basically we're deleting old content every time we upload new stuff. So if you don't subscribe, you're not going to know when another one of these fucking incredible podcasts lands.
Yeah, these are getting real good. They're only going to get better. when we learned to actually how to do it.
You know what I thought is we could do the podcast guarantee. We give it a time back guarantee, which is you listen to one of our podcasts and you don't like it, we'll give you your time back in the form of we'll do an hour, and I guess we split it between us, an hour of labor. Obviously, we can't go to your job because we don't have those qualifications. That's a lot of mess, but we can go to your home. We'll do an hour of yard work or do the dishes. There's two of us. We only have to do a half hour each, or you can do one of us the whole time. You have to pay to get us there, obviously. We're not paying to get to your house. And then we won't be – so we recompense you for the time you wasted in the form of labor. Now
– that's a good idea. Okay. Well, finish your thought. But I have a better idea.
Well, here's the – just to be clear, though, any damage caused during that hour of the labor we do, like if you ask us to work on your car and we cause a lot of damage to the car, we're not going to be liable for that. So basically, by listening to this podcast, you agree that if you tell us that we suck, you are inviting us to your home. And if we fuck it up, we're not liable.
Yeah, this is a limited liability corporation.
That's the guarantee. And I think that's you're not going to get a better guarantee from any podcast on the internet.
I have an alternate suggestion. You can maybe cut out if you don't like it as much, but you listen to this podcast. If you don't like it, we guarantee, we promise that we will listen or watch an hour of whatever you make us watch all the way through.
Oh, so we could have people write in and say, hey, you got to watch this movie because I listened to your podcast and it wasn't good. So now you have to watch this terrible film.
Yeah, or listen to my terrible podcast. Or whatever. Or yeah. Most likely, well,
I'd like to do it as a film. I think that'd be useful. So we say, all right, I'm sorry we hurt you, but now you can hurt us right back, and then we'll have a terrible film, and maybe you can do a segment on that if this ever happens.
Yeah, but what's most likely going to happen if we ever get listeners is they'll suggest that we just watch a lot of gay porn.
Oh, well, let's limit it to
films. We need a gay porn clause.
Yeah. Let's
really nasty straight porn too. I don't want to watch that.
Well, yeah, let's okay, folks. I'm sorry, but the no guarantee porn. Is going to have no to be restricted. No, it's going to have to be restricted to actual movies because that's what this podcast is about. Alternately, we could come to your house and take a shit on the floor, and you can't hold us liable if you say this is bad.
Yeah, limited liable. Okay. Liable. Go read Justicide at WordPress.com.
Yes.
And or super rap attack at WordPress.com.
To a much lesser extent, super rap attack at WordPress.com. Not at WordPress.
Is that the actual link?
Is there WordPress? So you can read written reviews of these and other films at justicide.wordpress.com and also superrapattack.wordpress.com. You can watch pornography at redtube.com. You can do whatever you want because the internet is a big place, but those are some suggestions.
Yeah. Go out and enjoy it.
Yeah. Lovely, listener. We love you and we will see you next week.
Love you.